This is the Adam Gold Show.
I actually had a conversation with, trying to think of his name again. Oh, Alec, who's going to be here on Monday. Right, exactly. Alec Campbell will be back on Monday.
Alex, this is home for me.
Thank you. Excellent. So I was trying to explain to him the Cam Newton pig chicken thing.
Okay.
And even though we've talked about it for 2 days, mm-hmm. I still couldn't do it justice. I mean, that is so great. Like, Cam just expected, like, all the football writers, either on the Zoom or in the room, to know the story of the pig and the chicken. I'm like, unless it's a nursery rhyme, mm-hmm. I got no shot. And I'm probably not alone.
We should actually make the story of the chicken and the pig into a nursery rhyme.
Should be a nursery rhyme.
But you should do that Monday. Or we can do it today.
I can't do it. I need time.
Okay. I'll do it for halftime entertainment.
So, anyway, there's that. So, Alec will be back on Monday. He told me that he did very little over the last several weeks. But we're going to talk about that on Monday with him. But he was just trying to get caught up. So he was asking me a question about the Canes. He's watched the Canes, but he hasn't been following, like, team news, a little bit more team news today. Nothing earth-shattering. We'll get to it later. Trip Tracy will join us. Luke DeCock of the News and Observer will join us. And our roundtable will be Lauren Brownlow from WRLSportsFan.com and Vashti Hurt from Carolina Blitz. So I'm excited about today's show.
Stacked lineup today.
Oh, huge. And we also have Who You Got.
Yep.
We've got In the Mentions. Mm-hmm. We've got Minute Takes. We've got a whole bunch of stuff to get to. So why waste any more time? They're off. Last night was a night without competitive sports. Did you know that, Dennis?
Yeah, I witnessed it.
Last night, there was nothing competitive on your television screen or on your radio dial. Because the Canes really weren't.
We sucked.
They stunk last night. They haven't played well since the pre-holiday shutdown, but they stunk.
Yeah.
Last night. There's a difference between not playing well and what that was last night. They got waxed like Raleigh Fingers' mustache by the Blue Jackets. 6-0. Mm. Here's the thing. There was a moment in the third period early. Carolina was down 2-0 after two. And there was a moment in the third period early where I thought, you know what? That was a really good shift.
Yeah.
I think it was Aho and somebody else. Jarvis, had back-to-back chances to score from in tight. There was rebounds created.
Jordan Staal had an opportunity.
Right? Like, in the first 2.5 minutes of the period, I thought, okay.
Yeah.
Looks good. Get one. Momentum, come back. I mean, they came back from 2 goals down to beat Florida. Or not to beat Florida, but to get into overtime.
Yeah.
Came back from 2 goals down against Washington, now a long time ago, when they weren't playing very well. Now, that game, they didn't win. They didn't even get to overtime. But anyway, they came back. I thought there was a chance.
They're down 4 against that same Columbus team.
Yeah, but that game was way different than yesterday's game.
Yeah.
Because in that game, Carolina was generating ridiculous numbers of good chances.
True.
Just hadn't scored. In this game, not really. And so I'm thinking, all right, this all looks good. And then, boom, 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 5-0. It was that quick.
Yeah, 3 goals in 1:07.
Yep, and not good. Rod Brind'Amour sums it all up after the game.
There's no excuse. I mean, yeah, we weren't sharp or we weren't going to be, you know, lights out, but that was not good. You know, not a good effort by pretty much everybody. So haven't had those really ever. That was a real poor effort. Give the other team credit. They stuck to their game plan and they were going to, you know, do it a certain way, the right way. And we wanted to look for something else. And, you know, like I said, I told you this before, I felt like we were going to be scrambly and rusty, just kind of not expected that, but not, you know, it doesn't affect how hard you got to work and how, you know, that's where we just didn't come ready in that department. So, you know, that's what you get.
It was wow. Last night, by the way, the Canes Corner podcast was still good. Shane Willis jumped on.
Oh, very nice.
And Shane, when they were done, and can I just say, we're going to talk to Tripp Tracy in about 23 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
He did a pretty good job last night doing play by play.
He did.
Yeah, that ain't, I mean, he's never done it before ever. And my advice to him when he asked me, like, what do I do? Because it's a radio only game. It's not like you can rely on the pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I was honestly, my feeling was don't even try to do play by play. Just let me know where the puck is. Just like, I don't even care who has it. Just let me know where the puck is, which team is in possession of it. I don't need to know players. And then you and Shane just talk hockey.
Yeah.
You do that for three periods, nobody will complain.
Mm-hmm.
Tripp actually did a very good job. A legitimately good job doing play by play. So we'll talk to Tripp a little bit later on. Anyway, Canes will be back at it tomorrow afternoon. Matter of fact, 25 hours from right now.
Yeah.
Against the Vancouver Canucks.
Matinee, actually.
Yeah. 1:08 opening faceoff. Was it straight up 7 o'clock?
7:05.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Almost felt like it was straight up 7 o'clock.
Yeah, 7:05.
John Buchagras with the absolute fly maroon velvet jacket last night.
Oh, yeah. He looked sharp up there.
Very, very sharp. And then they fed him chicken parm when it
was
all over.
I was jealous.
That's so good. That's so funny. What a bit that is. All right. We have more. When the NFL season came to an end, there were three black head coaches in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
There were three. 5 days later, we're down to one. Brian Flores got the Ziggy in Miami after 3 years, including 19 wins over his last two seasons. Also, if you take out the seven straight losses to start with the Dolphins, he was like 25-17,
mm-hmm.
or 24-7, something like that. 25-17 or 24-18. In 24-18 in 3 years. After that 0-7 start, with a roster that was completely decimated, and a stab at Josh Rosen, which begat Ryan Fitzpatrick, and then Tua Tagovailoa. I mean, it's just been a mess.
Jacoby Brissett started several games this year too.
So
back to back winning seasons.
Flores should not have gone anyway. Houston. Yesterday, told David Culley to clean out his office after one season. They were 3-14. They had zero chance to succeed. They were an absolute mess on and off the field. The Deshaun Watson thing was an anvil dropped on the franchise. And that leaves Mike Tomlin. That's it. Who's been the field boss of the Steelers for 15 years. Has never had a losing season. Our friend Bomani Jones from ESPN on the head coaching issue in the NFL.
There are going to be eight openings. How many of them do we believe are going to go to someone who isn't a white man? Like, is this the year that Eric Bieniemy gets the job, for example? I don't really know. I also don't have an explanation for why it is that he doesn't have a job. It just seems that people in his position typically would have one by now. But the league's just got a much bigger issue, and I think that the commissioner of the NFL cares a lot about these diversity matters, and I don't think he has the clout to make his owners care.
That is 100% true. I think that is 100% true. And the truth of the matter is you can't make the owners do anything. You can't. I'm not even suggesting you should. The owners are in charge.
Yeah.
They are absolutely in charge. Roger Goodell has proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that he either doesn't have the clout or doesn't have the stones to stand up to them. And I mean, you would think with how many years of $30 million salaries, you could just go, you know what? I don't need this gig anymore.
Mm-hmm.
My pockets are straight. Yeah. I can simply say, this is what it should be, fellas. And if you don't like it, get another commissioner. Which, if I'd like to say that if I were Roger Goodell, I would do that. But I also don't know how much enjoyment you get out of $30 million annual salaries. Actually, I think it's higher now.
Yeah, he usually gets a bonus at the end of the year, too. So he gets just, like 40 plus.
I honestly don't know. But I also don't want to rail about the lack of black head coaches in the league. That is the low-hanging fruit topic of discussion. I do see Flores and Culley very differently. To me, Flores far more cause for anger and alarm. Again, he won games with awful rosters. To me, should not have been fired. I think will be rehired. Maybe not this year. I don't know. Soon he'll get another job. But I think if there is racism in the story, it's with Flores. I don't believe that it has anything to do with Culley. But here's my whole feeling on the David Culley hire was this. Because he was hired last year. He was the last of the hires an off season ago. And it was very soon after Deshaun Watson had made his feelings very clear that he wanted Houston to hire Eric Bieniemy. And to that point, Houston had not even interviewed Eric Bieniemy. They did eventually interview Eric Bieniemy. Bieniemy, remember, there was a ton of jobs open last year, and he got none of them. Not only that, he got very little interest in those gigs. And I'm not here to say because I am not, it's not that I'm not qualified. I don't have enough information other than it didn't happen to say why Eric Bieniemy didn't get any of the jobs, why they went to Nick Sirianni, why they went to Arthur Smith, why they did to David Culley. But Watson so badly wanted Eric Bieniemy to be the guy and made his feelings known. And I think at that point, for whatever reason, the Texans were like, you don't run this. Which, I kind of pay attention to my franchise quarterback, unless I were the Green Bay Packers. So, when they did the cursory interview for Bieniemy, and remember, they were the last team to go, and there were a whole bunch of hires. None of them went to people of color. They hired David Culley.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe they hired David Culley knowing that they were going to stink and knowing that they were going to fire him.
Yeah.
I really believe they hired anybody and that there was nobody who was going to... Are you really serious to think that we would believe that David Culley was a more qualified option to be the head coach than, I'll just use Eric Bieniemy, than Eric Bieniemy? Are you trying to tell me that?
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, I'm just here on the outside from, 1,600 miles away. But I kind of think that's bogus.
And he was like basically the equivalent of signing a bridge quarterback. Just like, all right, we're just going to sign you to get us to the next person that we really want to have.
Teddy Bridgewater.
Exactly.
Anyway,
Ryan Fitzpatrick.
So, quick aside here for people who are screaming at the radio or at the TV, because we're on television. What about Ron Rivera? Yeah. Ron Rivera is a minority. Dad's Puerto Rican. Mom is of Mexican heritage. If you wanted to toss in the Jets, Robert Saleh, he is of Egyptian descent. Is he also the only Muslim head coach in the NFL? So if you're just looking for men of color, there you go. Okay, but I'm pretty sure that we all understand that that's not what we're talking about with the Rooney Rule and all of the all of that issue. All right. So to me, this is all about black head coaches, and I've said this before. Does anybody point to anybody that has ever been called a football genius who is a coordinator? And do you know what they all, 100% of them, have in common?
What's that?
They're all white.
Yeah.
Joe Brady was a brilliant mind. Really? Where? I'm not saying he's not doesn't have a future, but there's no obvious brilliance dripping off of Joe Brady.
No.
But there are zero examples of that guy being black. Zero. We have two of the best offensive coordinators in the NFL, Byron Leftwich and Eric Bieniemy, both black. Nobody ever calls them genius. I'm not suggesting that they are, but nobody ever calls them that. And it doesn't matter who you are. If you have stood next to Sean McVay in line for at the dry cleaner or at a Chick-fil-A, then you're a genius. Hey, it's going to be a future head coach.
Yeah.
Somehow Kellen Moore is a genius. What does Dallas do that is so brilliant that makes Kellen Moore a genius? I don't know. Dallas has incredible talent, which they haven't gotten the most out of. So we can all, it's very convenient to blame Mike McCarthy for that. Mm-hmm. But if Kellen Moore was so brilliant, and maybe he is, I don't know, but I would expect to see it. And what we have seen the last half of the season, apart from like two wins against bad teams, Dallas has been largely underwhelming offensively. Again, I'm not going to raise a stink about this issue because we don't know what the next cycle is going to bring us. So there are either six or seven jobs open. I think Bomani said eight, but I'm not sure there's going to be eight. Giants, Bears, Vikings, Broncos, Dolphins, Texans, maybe the Raiders if Bisacci doesn't get it.
Yeah.
Right?
I guess you can throw the Raiders into that mix.
So that would be seven, right? Mm-hmm. Giants, Bears, Vikings, Broncos, Dolphins, Texans. So let's see who gets hired. Like I know one of the hot names is Jared Mayo, who's a linebackers coach for the New England Patriots.
Yeah.
Which I believe was Brian Flores' old job before he became the head coach of the Dolphins.
Mayo played a long time in the NFL, but he actually played for New England.
Oh, yeah, he did. He was a linebacker for the Patriots. Mm-hmm. I think he played at the University of Tennessee, if I'm not mistaken, but I'm not 100% sure. So, but, like, there's somebody of color. So let's wait and see what the cycle gives us. I think you're right to be skeptical if you are doubtful that the NFL will have a successful minority hiring cycle. I think you're right to be skeptical.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to have to prove what they're about. All right, I have a couple of other things about it. You know, Amari Cooper was fined nearly $15,000 for a violation of the league's COVID protocols, the off-field COVID protocols. And I think I'm going to shock some people here because I think the NFL is wrong in this particular case, or at the very least, they are contradicting themselves in this particular case. Cooper was at a Mavericks game, sitting courtside, without a mask. He was also at the Cotton Bowl on the sidelines, supporting Alabama, mm-hmm. also without a mask. He's unvaccinated. The NFL has different rules for unvaccinated players. For instance, if Cooper, who was not in a luxury suite, but were he in a luxury suite wearing a mask and fewer than 10 people were around him, he's fine. He is not, no player, I guess, but he is not allowed to be in large groups of people. He has to be wearing a mask. Vaccinated people also have to be wearing a mask, but there are other things for vaccinated players to deal with. But anyway, as an unvaccinated player, he is subject to harsher penalties. But here's where the NFL goes awry, in my opinion. Cooper, a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, had COVID. So once that happens, he falls into a category where he is not subject to daily testing.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody square these things for me. If you're no longer subject to testing, you're going to have to riddle me why he doesn't have to test, but he has to wear a mask. Like, the two things you should either have to wear a mask and everybody should be tested, because the only reason to wear a mask is to stop the spread.
Yeah.
So if you have determined that by having COVID, he no longer has to worry about contracting and spreading, which, if that's what the science says, okay, then why does he have to wear a mask everywhere he goes?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I truly don't understand. And this is why when the NFL changed their policy, I was blown away by the fact that you don't have to test. It wasn't about this, players that already had it. It was, we're not testing asymptomatic people. Who defines what asymptomatic is?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Because the way it was described to me was that a sneeze can be construed as a symptom.
Mm-hmm.
A cough can be construed as a symptom, whether it is or not. There are very few people walking around this earth that don't sneeze or cough once a day.
Yeah.
Very few people are those symptoms. I'm just curious who defines that. Like, I'm not trying to be a hardliner on this. I am just asking the question. All right, I got a couple of other things very quickly. We are headed, Dennis, to a decisive fifth set.
Yes.
In Australia.
Nice.
All right, so the saga of Novak Djokovic. He was told he wasn't going to be allowed to enter Australia for the Open without a vaccine. He's known this for months. So then he, air quotes, proved the medical exemption for not getting the vaccine. His medical exemption was a positive COVID test that he took on December 16th. So that's, I think we're in our second set now. So the Australian Open said, yes, you can play. You have met our medical exemption criteria. Rigorous, they call them. So
first set, Djokovic.
Second set.
Oh, second set.
Because initially he was told you have to have the vaccine.
That's right.
Right. And then he said, oh, I have the vaccine. So my question would be to that is, what if you didn't test positive?
Ooh.
Anyway, and he tested positive, by the way, about a week after the deadline to apply. So then he was detained at the airport. The nation of Australia has now won the second set. Mm. Or maybe that is the second set, and now it's 1-1. Then he was released and placed in the draw. 2-1 in favor of Djokovic.
I love it.
Today he had his visa revoked again.
Whoops.
Yeah. He's going to appeal. So now we're headed to the fifth set. Mm. For those people keeping score at home, Djokovic is 33-9 in his career in 5-set matches.
Now, if he wins this, can he claim a 34th fifth set win?
If I were him, I would.
Okay.
If I were him, I would.
And he'll be on the next plane home.
Yeah, well, I still think he's going to play, but it's pretty clear that the government of Australia does not want him to play. It's pretty clear because the two sets in this match that he lost were both at the federal government level. The two sets that he won, one was at a court, and the other was Tennis Australia. Tennis Australia is definitely hopeful that Djokovic will play. There's a huge Serbian population in Australia. They love him. And he's a fun player to watch. I mean, to be honest, Djokovic is an entertaining player and character. But this is not a great look for Tennis Australia, Djokovic, or the nation of Australia.